morning, good afternoon, good evening, Power Hour Nation. Wherever you are, from sea to shining sea, to the shores beyond the shores, I'm your guest host, George Freund, adding a little maple syrup to the broth. And we always like to wake up to the smell of freedom. What's that sound? What's that sound, son? Sounds like freedom. I always like to wake up to the sound of freedom. It sounds like victory. And there's no greater victory than Calvary, and there's no greater Calvary than the Power Hour Nation, because they're forming posse, and they're collecting the evidence, and they're preparing the case to take the evil before the court of public opinion. And you're all sworn in as ladies and gentlemen of the jury of public opinion. That's why the media, mainstream media, has worked so hard to prevent you from ever having all the facts and evidence. Because as that jury, you can convict or acquit. And they rig the game the best they can, so you convict the patsies, the innocent, and go after the stellar people who may be the martyrs for the truth. The truth is a very, very powerful word. Jesus said, the truth will set us free, and I believe that. I believe that wholeheartedly. I believe it more than I ever believed it in the past. Because the opposite of what the truth is, of course, is the falsehood. That means we're getting stuff from liars. And there's two great truths in my lifetime that if they were solved and became the official record, it would basically tear society apart, because we would know that the deep state, our government, has been complicit in the greatest crimes ever. One of them was in my childhood, the assassination of John Kennedy, the anniversary coming up very soon. And the revelations of what really happened there, that truth enough, I think, would bring down the New World Order and the house of cards that we're forced to live under. Of course, the other great truth would be 9/11. That's one that's almost going down the memory hole now, because, you know, we're pretty much approaching a generation since it's happened. And that's just awful. What's even worse is the people who try to dig out the truth, to root out the truth, to separate the fact from fiction, are bemoaned in the media. And the funny thing was, is they used that very word to denigrate them. So we used to call people, and still do, looking for the truth in 9/11, truthers. And the media twisted that around by putting emphasis on the word in a different manner to make it almost sound like it was something terrible or evil to know the truth, and to bemoan anyone who would even dare question the authorities and look for the truth, especially when the truth that they give us defies the laws of science as we know them completely and totally, and obscures all the facts because they're concealed, hidden under bureaucratic walls that, you know, have to be broken down. We have to be like Joshua and blow that trumpet until the walls come down, or we'll never get the truth. And if we never get the truth, we'll never be set free. And in the JFK issue, like, I remember that. You know, I was alive then, but I was very, very young. I was only 6. And I remember leaving school that day, and there was a terrible energy because it had happened, but it wasn't that we were put in the loop because we were too young. You could just feel this tension in the air as we left the school. And I ran home, and, you know, we just wondered, like, what's going on? And as I came in the door, the TV was on, the news was on, my mother was crying. And I just ran to in front of the TV, just dropped everything on the floor, you know, took off because it was cold then. This is Canada. Took off my snow pants and jacket and just left it right there and just fell to the ground, sat down and watched the news as it unfolded. And I guess that's what turned me into a giant news junkie from my earliest age, is something very dynamic, something earth-shattering, life-changing happened. And my life would probably be very different from anything that I ever expected it to be. It wasn't going to be the warm, fuzzy place that we're inured to think about with the fairy tales and such. And, you know, I don't know if I've ever mentioned it before, but there is a master mind control program. It comes from these child stories. And it's set deep inside you. And every parent says these words to their child, and they're inured to accept whatever poison comes along based on these words. Once upon a time, we lived happily ever after. So if anyone tells you a story where we don't live happily ever after, you tune it out. And generally, that's the truth. Because sometimes with the truth, it just doesn't instantly go to happily ever after. We have to wade through it, sift it. There has to be probably arrests, trials, incarcerations of the people who did these evil deeds. And they're so evil in some respects that, you know, good people just can't even bear to look at them, because it goes beyond, as Daniel quoted before, this threshold that we have to be able to take in information. And if something's behind this threshold, that it's too high, we can't reach it, our brain shut down, our mind shut down. And you see that in people when you talk to them, if their eyes go glassed over because they can't handle the truth, as that old film network said. And that's something that we have to understand and be considerate about for people who are newbies. Is, you know, you can't teach nuclear science in kindergarten. You got to work up a little bit. And for a lot of people, they're not prepared to handle the truth. So it has to be given in small doses. And maybe with some people, they can never handle the truth. So it doesn't really pay to force them into it. They're going to have to watch it unfold before their eyes and just take a good hit in the solar plexus when it comes to get them. And the Kennedy truth is one of them. And, you know, it's a day, a time I'd never forget. Other great lies and falsehoods, just because we've come out of our Armistice Day celebrations here in Canada, we call it Remembrance Day, as pretty much as in Britain, too. And people still don't know the truth about what caused these wars. Great calamities, worldwide wars, millions killed. And you don't know what really caused them. Some of the reasons are still classified today for World War One, believe it or not. It was like a month after the shooting, around the shooting of Sarajevo, that all the governments got together and tried to negotiate some sort of something or other. So we can assume very quickly, I think, what we're talking about, because it's still on the front pages today. The armistice, who is going to form the New World Order? Who's going to be the global government? And are there forces of resistance to that that might call the word nationalist dirty or good based on what their beliefs are? And as a Christian, I don't believe in a global government or a world government, because I believe that would be the government of the Antichrist. And absolute power corrupts absolutely, so it can't be good. There has to be variations. I look at it, too, just like you would look at the Titanic, compartmentalization. With proper compartmentalization, when you hit the iceberg, you're not going to sink. And if you take away all the bulkheads, then when you do hit an iceberg, everybody goes down together. Or look at it like swimming. If you're swimming individually in a group of 50, and one person starts to drown, there's lots of people to take options. Some can try to rescue, some can swim to shore, but if you're all chained together, when one drowns, everyone drowns. And that's like simple logic about why I'm not big on the global system, or that everything's under one roof, because when we get this one dictator, ultimately, who will rule the globe, I can't see that person being mature enough, good enough to do it. I really don't. And so I would have to say I agree with the president. I always have. As soon as I heard about these things, that I would say I want individual nation states, separate, sovereign, and independent. We can work together. We can form treaties. We can get along together. But by and large, there has to be this distinction, this separation. And as far as World War One is concerned, As far as World War One is concerned, what did come up was we had kings back then. There was the King of England, the Tsar, the Kaiser. We had other lesser kings as well, but the Austro-Hungarian Empire's monarch, and one of the other big ones was the monarch in Turkey. And they had to be overwhelmed and turned around to remove them from power. And the reason they were removed from power is because there was a capitalist corporate system coming in that was going to take its place. 1913 is the establishment of the Federal Reserve, and then we need powerful people who aren't born blue-blooded to take them out. And one of the great lies of World War One, when you look at it logically, and I do have a very in-depth video on my website, conspiracy-cafe.com, about the assassination of Sarajevo and the murder of the Archduke. And the only viable suspect was the king himself getting rid of his son. And And the reason he was getting rid of his son is he married not a commoner, but something just slightly above a commoner, Sophie. And he didn't want her to be the empress of the Austro-Hungarian Empire. He would take anybody else. And I believe he set this up to start a war so that he could possess Serbia, get rid of his son that he just despised. He tried to have him killed in a hunting accident or something long before that. So there is a good cause for all these feelings. And then we allow this to happen. Someone blows a horn, and we all run off to some war and violate the master commandment of murder without even a care or a thought. So that's something I leave with you. We're never fighting for our freedom. We're fighting for order. Who's going to have it and who's going to do it? And we can't allow that type of thing to get into us anymore because we have nuclear weapons. There are going to be no survivors. And, you know, we had a great show with Jordan Maxwell before talking about why isn't our prayer effective? And this kind of leads into our guest, Judith Berry Baker, because she had some questions about God and why bad things happen and the effectiveness of prayer. And I'm confounded myself because my grandmother was Catholic and took me to Polish Catholic Church and I didn't understand the language, but I read the Bible. And when I read the Bible, I saw what was in the church didn't match what I was reading in the book. So for people who are of the faith, I refer you to Exodus 20 to look at the 15 commandments. So you've been programmed to think about the first 10 and you forget about the other five at the end, starting with Exodus 23. So take off a shoe and a sock and you can count five more. There shall not be gods of gold and silver. Find a cathedral without gold and silver. An altar shall be made of earth. Earth. I've never seen a church with an earthen altar. And if you can have an altar, it's two unhewn stones, and no tool may touch it, or it is polluted, desecrated, useless, worthless. How do we communicate with God? And then the last one, there shall be no steps up to the altar. Those are God's commandments on how to build the phone booth to call him. And if we don't follow those instructions, how do we think we're going to get through? In fact, in Acts 7:48, it says, how be it the Most High dwelleth not in temple made with hands? Think about that. We're not even supposed to be inside. We're supposed to be outside. So we're going to take a break and come back with Judith, then we're going to go to Dallas. And we're going to solve a big mystery and find the truth. And welcome back to Power Hour Nation. I am your guest host, George Freund. And we have a very special guest at a very special conference going on in Dallas. And probably one of the most important conferences in the world as far as I'm concerned. Because the Warren Commission was a joke. It was all set up. I remember on the History Channel when they were releasing Lyndon Johnson tapes, listening to Lyndon in his own words, and I just wish I had this recorded, but it must be around somewhere. But he's calling Earl Warren to arrange the Warren Commission, and Warren doesn't want to do it. He's like, sir, no way do I want to do this. And I'll never forget Johnson's reply to him. Sir, I'm not asking you, I am telling you. This is what you're going to do, and this is what you're going to find. And I think Earl Warren knew at that point that if he didn't want to die in a plane crash or be shot or have something happen to him, he better go along and do what he's told, no matter how painful it is. But just the tone of voice that Lyndon had and the words he used, you knew this was a scam from the get-go. And we are very, very fortunate that there are people who are seeking the truth, and they're in Dallas. And Judith is one of them. And when you read her book, and just the fine detail of everything that she knew on the ground in New Orleans and later about what was going on at the time. This should be required reading in every school, really, and CNN should be in Dallas covering this convention to get the truth. But they won't be there. So we're here, and we welcome you, Judith, and we thank you very, very much for all the work you've done.
Well, God bless you, and he certainly has blessed me that I'm able to speak to so many people who care about the truth and care about each other, you know, and we try to do what we can for each other, and without God in my life, I know I wouldn't be here. I'd be dead. So I have so much to be grateful for every single day, my friend George. I'm going to tell you right now, every single day. I say, thank you, God, for another day that I'm alive. Thank you, God.
Oh, indeed. And I do, too. And I've had many close calls, a car accident. I've been shot at twice. And, you know, I had three heart attacks. And each one of them, you know, you just feel it like, I'm coming. Remember George from that comedy, you know, George, whatever his name was, from Sanford and Son. I'm coming, Elizabeth. I'm coming. It's the big one. And I always liked that line. Never thought I'd be saying it myself because my mother's name was Elizabeth. And, you know, but when you feel that, it's just you and God. He sent me back, and I'm here, and this is what he told me to do, is we have to, you know, lead people to the truth and free us from this bondage. So, you know, maybe we can get a little bit of your background for people who don't know on how you came into this and, how you were basically getting on the boat here for, being the top-end researcher in cancer and developing a weapon for cancer.
Well, of course, originally my grandmother, in fact, I'm wearing jewelry today to honor my grandmother. When she died of cancer, it broke my heart, and I determined I was going to cure cancer no matter what. Well, the no matter what turned into their powers greater than I was, you know, to kick me out of cancer research after they used me and abused me, basically, to help develop a biological weapon using cancer. There were three doctors that were very, very involved with cigarette products, smoking cigarettes and all that can cause cancer. They were going around testifying. It was Dr. George Moore, who was the director of the Roswell Institute, the oldest institute, cancer institute in the United States at the time and still in business. And then there was, of course, Dr. Howard Deal, and Deal was the vice president of the American Cancer Society in charge of all the research. And then the third person was Dr. Alt Lochner, who's clinic even today, you can wear the bracelet that says, you know, we're going to cure cancer and so on and so forth. And he was the lung cancer specialist. And because he was in lung cancer, that was important. And who was I? I was someone who had given cancer to mice in only 7 days with cigarette products. So they were extremely interested in who I was. And then I was able to do this, even though I had a lot of help from Walter Reed and from Oak Ridge and so on. Still, I had done this on my own. And with where my mice were housed was the dirt floor under a stadium, you know. And so, I mean, so they came and they shut it down because it was dangerous. What I was doing was absolutely dangerous. And but I was very useful, going to be useful in New Orleans because they had a ring of researchers working on something since March 23rd, 1962, and a very easy date for me to remember because it was my husband's birthday. They had set everything up. They wanted to kill Fidel Castro, and a lot of people were interested in doing just that. They had their teams of assassins that were unable to do this because he had a lot of help around him. But one thing, the United States is not going to be blamed if he dies of cancer, and he smoked cigars like they were going out of style. He was always had a cigar in his mouth. All right, so there you go. So they brought me in because I also had a formula called, today called the RPMI 1640 formula. And we had the precursor.
And welcome back, our nation. I'm your guest host, George Freund, speaking to you from north of the parallel and south of the parallel in Dallas. We have the femme fatale, Lee Oswald's girlfriend, Judith Berry Baker, a woman who has just devoted her life to telling the truth and getting out the story of what the deep state really does, and they still do, really. In my opinion, from, you know, scouring the news and watching things that happen, I'm fully convinced that, cancer has been weaponized to such an extent that it's used as the preferred weapon of choice. You know, the Russians, they say, always come out with some weird chemical to get you from an inventory that's going to make them caught instantly. But I still believe in the covert arts and sciences as being something that you don't ever want to be caught with. And that's the primary weapon. And it's used en masse, and it's used in, you know, certain select things. And one that really disturbed me here in Canada, well, maybe two, but we had a mayor here in Toronto who was almost as vilified as President Trump. And all of a sudden, he got a very rare form of cancer, and he was gone in a very, very short period of time. And he was pilloried in all the late-night talk shows and such. You probably remember him. His name was Ford. And his brother now is Premier of Ontario, and I'm worried about him, that they might try the same stunt on him and do the same thing. But it was just, like, so bizarre, so quick. He lived a bit of a rogue's life and, you know, may have been open to having something extra put in, you know, some of his carcinogens that he induced into his body. But that was the first thought that went through my mind, is that they're using this. And, you know, back in Judith's day, you know, that was just the beginning, the start of it, to really see that, you know, this is the ultimate weapon, because you just seem to die a natural death. And if you want to continue a little bit where you left off, we have to break for the commercials, and you've got a little more time on your hands now.
Okay, and I apologize for speaking too long. The main thing is, please ask me questions, and let's go from there so that people can get an idea of what is important, do you think, that I should be talking about.
Well, one of the things that really gets me is when you were at Mary Sherman's apartment, she had these vials of material that were cancerous. And you almost describe it in your book as you know, like Dr. Frankenstein's lab, that there's something in there changing and becoming weaponized before your eyes.
Yeah, well, actually, that stack was about almost a foot high of slides. Usually that stack, if you're making, for, say, a week, you want to see how fast cells are dividing. And every time they divide, you take a sample and you fix it so that you can see it forever, you know, on your slides. And so instead of having a stack maybe 2 inches high, this thing was a foot high. That's how fast it was growing. I mean, it was just shocking. And to see how, and you add just a tiny bit of sugar. That's what really got me about sugar. It's really hard to eat sugar after watching. You put the tiniest pinch of sugar, and those things started growing so fast they suffocated each other in the test tube. It was the most violent and vicious form of cancer I'd ever seen, and I had worked with quite a bit of it. By then, I'd had 2 years of training and had worked in what's now Shands Hospital and University of Florida and so on, had all kinds of specialized training. They brought me in, we thought we were doing the right thing. I was so impressed. I can save the world. You know, we're going to save them. Young people think like that. By my family and I, after all, we lived in Florida. I was surrounded by anti-Castro people there and students and so on. We saw the tanks rumbling down all the way down to Key West and all these soldiers coming down. And we waited on the brink and the precipice of whether what we're going to be blown up to smithereens by an atom bomb. And I should go ahead and say, hey, I think Fidel Castro is a nice guy. He won't do that again. No, I mean, we had some motivation, and it looks cruel now. How could I dare want to get rid of Castro? But Castro wanted to get rid of us. I mean, if you just get perspective. Now, today, I know violence just begets violence. You have to find other ways to solve your problems besides killing each other. Anyway.
Indeed, indeed. We see this, you know, like the world is at the same focal point again. The major powers are all lined up against each other, going through nuclear drills that aren't really, you know, household words. It's, you know, more if you follow, you know, more sophisticated news you hear about.
Fear. It's part of this fear syndrome. Let's get everybody afraid so that we'll be anxious to, you know, to do harm to each other, and we can justify any kind of thing we want. We have people have making an awful lot of money. They're daddy war box. You know, they make their money off of our fear by creating war after war.
And this is something
now the thing about weaponizing cancer. If this was going on as it was indeed going on in 1963, we're talking about 55 years later, and they still haven't cured cancer. I mean, come on. When is the last time we've had a major disease cured? There is no compelling reason why we don't have many major diseases cured, but frankly, how are you going to make money if you don't have any diseases left?
I think you just hit the nail on the head there. How are we going to make money? And, you know, in reading a book on how the sulfa drugs were invented or came to pass, like Bayer kept everything secret, and they tried to make a prototype that they could copyright that no one could ever, or patent, pardon me, that no one could ever use. But it wasn't very effective, and it was the Pasteur Institute that finally just released the sulfa drugs, which worked very, very well, and saved probably millions and millions of lives, so people wouldn't
people
die of the big four.
And even people suffered from disease, for example, and they should go back to these old antibiotics that the Lyme virus and so on probably would respond to. In other words, we do it for our dogs. You know, our dogs have better vet care than we have for humans, and it doesn't cost near as much. Go to your vet if you want to get some help.
Well, one thing I learned over the years is there is herbal cures for cancer, and they're in the same boat as the sulfa. They can't be patented. And one of the most famous or important of the bunch is wormwood. The artemisinin in wormwood kills cancer cells on contact. The University of Washington did studies
on
this.
We have to be really careful and not use blanket, this, that, and the other. We had, okay, as a matter of fact, here's what I think very interesting and people need to know about cancer. There are the American Cancer Society and the doctors all that take credit for curing a certain proportion of cancer, a certain percentage. If these people had never had any treatment, almost the exact same percentage would have spontaneously been able to use their own immune systems to overcome that cancer. So I can't really discern how we have a lot of suffering going on. We have, why is it in America you lose your house, your car, and everything you have in order to get treatment? But if you're in Sweden, like my friend George, who got his stomach cancer operated on, he was there in the hospital 6 weeks. He said, George, how much did it cost you? $100. He said, it cost me $1.25 a day. I said, what? Yeah, I said, to rent the TV set. Why in America are they killing off our people and they're loading down our students with huge student loans? Those are free. And they say, oh, the taxes are so high in Sweden. I've been there for 10 years now. And that's just not, there's nothing when you have a happy people and they don't lose their homes and they're not in debt and their kids are going to school for free and you're telling me, oh, the taxes are high. When here I see homeless under the bridges, and I talk to a student, and that student is 40 years old, still paying on their student loans, and they still owe as much as when they started because that's how high their interest rates are. We are being crippled in our country by this love of money. And somewhere along the line, the unforgiving computer is running everybody's lives. You can't go into a bank and say, look, give me 2 more weeks. No, they just take your house away because the computer tells them to. So we have become a computerized nation that has no heart. Somehow we've got to get our heart back. We've got to get our love for each other back. And it's going to make a big difference. So how can we do that? Well, that's it. You can turn to God. But if you don't believe in God or love God, there are other ways that people do love each other. I don't care what religion they are, if they're atheists or whatever. When they get a chance to most people care. We've got to start caring more about each other and stop being so scared we're being manipulated. You should fight for your civil rights. You should fight for privacy. I can't carry a cell phone around. Why? Because then I get followed. You know, I tell, this is ridiculous. We should have privacy. We should have protection. Our government is not protecting us. It's protecting itself. So anyway, we need to have honest doctors. Right now, we have doctors that were influenced by Operation Paperclip. They came in. We had Nixon say, okay, it's okay now. Everybody can make money and make profit in medical care. It didn't used to be that way. So all your hospitals that was a charity and all, they're going out of business because they can't make money. They can't pay their people enough to keep up with these others. That's right.
Okay, and we'll see you on the other side of the break. And carry on with a more decent and equitable world. Welcome back to Our Nation. Your guest host, George Freund, Judith Ferry Baker, is with us. She said something very, very quickly, but very, very important in the previous string here, is if this lab or this whatever of Dr. Sherman's, she talked about how the sugar activated this cancer. And, you know, you must realize as you're going shopping or something that everything, every product you buy is just laced with sugar. And, I almost look at, we have to almost be concerned there's a genocide weapon on the loose, and you know, we put the worst things in our body to activate it and kill ourselves with. Back in the day, you also mentioned about the simian virus 40, that in this polio vaccine, is that they introduced cancer-causing materials and injected many, many people over a long period of time. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, they're trying to say it was only 98 million people.
Only?
No, merely. Yeah, well, actually, it's a lot more than that. Because they're trying to say it all stopped in 1963. Actually, it didn't stop. The last labs were still finding some contamination in 1999. Okay, that's a long time. Here is the bad news. The bad news is that right when they were looking and finding the SB40 monkey virus in tissues, in contaminated, you know, in cancerous tissues, just a decade ago, all of a sudden you don't hear about it anymore. They're not asking. It costs too much money for us to go and look and see if that virus is in everybody's cancer. Once they stopped, found it in about 60% of the cancers, and by the way, they were only looking for a certain kind of virus. There are families of these viruses. The SB40, number 40, okay? So you can have maybe 46 and 47, 48 are causing cancer too. But they're not looking for them. They're looking for the 40. They're looking for that particular fingerprint. The reason I'm saying this is what we're looking at now. We don't know how many people are getting cancer from this introduced monkey virus, and they won't show us because they're not using it as a standard procedure to see what caused the cancer. You've got a certain kind of cancer, and if you got money, we'll go and see if you have the monkey virus in there, right? And then if they only do one monkey virus, they might miss it anyway. So we need, of course, specific testing done, so we can see how pervasive this is. But frankly, probably everybody's got it. Why? It goes in the mother's milk. If mama got her polio shot, it was contaminated. And if she breastfed, her baby got it. But for all we know, if she just had a baby, the baby got it. We don't know whether it actually goes through the placental barrier or not. So, I want to be a doctor. I've kept up with the cancer research all in the field and all that. We're coming now into where they're working with genetic manipulation. Again, they're doing it through the genes. Well, that's wonderful. We could have done it many other ways, but they can patent this. They can make a lot of money. So at least we've got some progress now toward cure. But there are so many ways that cancer can be cured. I'm going to show the people here today, before they leave, some ways that they can avoid cancer. But I'd like to say, if anybody is diagnosed with cancer, please look up. Don't say I'm saying this. I don't want to get sued. All right? I'm not a doctor. Check it with your doctor if you want, blah, blah, blah. Okay? But the point is, look up alpha lipoic acid, transresveratrol, niacin, and your B vitamins, and vitamin D3 and vitamin A. Please look these up and look for their anti-cancer properties and ask yourself, why are you eating anything with sugar in it? You know, we get enough sweetness and sugar as it is from our fruits, but the fruit is balanced with vitamin C. Vitamin C is probably the other number one element. I take 1,000 units of vitamin C every day. I don't take the flu shot. I haven't had flu for decades. And I'm telling you right now, anybody who thinks you have to have all those vaccines in your body and all that, why is it that Sweden and Norway and places like that, they only require 11 to 13 vaccines for their kids, and we require 46 to 56? I'll tell you, there's one big difference between the two countries. It's called the dollar sign.
Indeed.
Now, Robert F. Kennedy is a friend of mine, and God bless him. He is trying to work to open up the field. They're going through lawsuits right now to try and get. We have not had any kind of real good testing going on to see if these vaccines actually work, these new ones. So I could go on and on, but here's the point. Going back to the Kennedy assassination, Kennedy was a very good man, and he wanted to stop war. He wanted to open up research in different directions and all. He was a power to be dealt with. That right now they don't want you to like Kennedy anymore. They want you to think only about he did drugs, you know, being a womanizer. Even the Smithsonian is saying things like, oh, yes, he, you know, PT-109, it was his fault, you know, that PT-109 got cut in half. It's his fault. Yeah, he helped save his people. They built a raft. They have taken out of the narrative about the PT-109, and he actually pulled a man several miles with his teeth to save his life. That's missing from the narrative now. Why are they doing this? They don't want. They know that the government is coming out that the government was responsible for the cover-up, responsible for allowing these things to happen. We had a vice president who desired to be a president more than anything on earth and would go along with anything. So there you go. Are you still there?
Oh, yes. I'm glad you brought that up. I have a, because I read a lot. That's my big sin.
I know.
And, you know, I was reading a book on the Kennedy brothers in World War II, and John was working under the Secretary of Defense, mostly because his father had influence, and with the Office of Naval Intelligence before Pearl Harbor. And he knew a lot of things about what were going on. He also got involved with, I believe it was a Swedish young lady who was, you know, quite vivacious, and he couldn't resist.
Yes, he did, yeah.
And after all that happened, and he became a bit of a security risk, probably because he knew that they knew that Pearl Harbor was going to happen in advance. It's just like in Russia, when you get transferred to Siberia or you get sent to the front, there's a reason for that. So the South Pacific is your Siberia, and it was the front. And I believe he was set up, and that they tried to kill him in that, because his brother was killed, his older brother, Joseph. He was killed testing airplanes.
Well, and that was ridiculous. Now he died. It's, all of these matters, here's the thing. He was a playboy and all that. This man still loved his country enough to go and serve. He didn't have to. And he gave up his salary and didn't take a penny for what he did. But what got to me is I didn't even like Kennedy when I met Lee Harvey Oswald. I had been among all these anti-Castro Cubans in Florida and I had some friends. And they hated Kennedy because he wasn't, you know, pushing against Castro like they wanted and because of the Bay of Pigs. And Lee just changed everything around in my head. I mean, this man was so pro-Kennedy. People need to know what a lie, what hideous lies have been said about Lee Oswald. So please, people, look at my book, Me and Lee, and the other one is JFK. It's called and the Unspeakable. Yeah. And I'm telling you that by James Douglas, that book explains so much. Abraham Bolin and Douglas both found out about that a man named Lee saved Kennedy's life in Chicago. I had reported way back in 1999 that Lee told me, he said, I believe I saved Kennedy's life 3 weeks ago. And that was just right in the